This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, joined by T. Xiao Eek. So as always, two stories for you this afternoon. So as COVID-19 spreads across the globe, a common question is, can infectious diseases be connected to environmental change? Mm. So a new study published by the University of California, Davis's One Health Institute, has indicated that it does. So we're going to explore the evidence that the study provides and how the processes that create wildlife population declines also enable the transmission of animal viruses to humans.
Yes, and today is the first day of phase three of our movement control order, and yet we are still hearing and reading of reports of people flouting the laws and regulations put in place. So we'll be discussing why some people may find it difficult to adhere to the MCO and how we can better communicate the need for it. And so we're asking you for your opinion on Twitter. Why do you think some people aren't following the rules of the MCO? Is it because they don't care, they don't understand, or they have no choice? You can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can also WhatsApp your thoughts over to us at 018-789-8899.
Yep. So we'll be discussing that story a little bit later. But for now, a major study has concluded that exploitation of wildlife by humans through things like hunting, trade, habitat degradation, and urbanization, you know, that then facilitates close contact between wildlife and humans. Mm-hmm. Which then increases the risk of a virus spillover. Mm. So many of these same activities also drive wildlife population declines, and that from there, the risk of extinction. So the study, which was published in the journal Proceedings of the Royal Society B, provides new evidence for assessing spillover risk in animal species and highlights how the processes that create wildlife population declines also enable the transmission of animal viruses to humans.
So according to the study's lead author, Christine Kruder-Johnson, an epidemiologist who is the director of the Epicenter for Disease Dynamics at the One Health Institute, spillover of viruses from animals is a direct result of our actions involving wildlife and their habitats. She also explained that the consequence of this is that the wildlife are sharing their viruses with us, and these actions both threaten species survival and also increase the risk of spillover. She summed it up by saying that in an unfortunate convergence of many factors, we will find ourselves in a mess we're in right now.
What a mess it is. Yeah. And for the study, the scientists, who were both from Australia and the US, they assembled a large data set of the 142 known viruses that spill over from animals to humans and the species that have been implicated as potential hosts. So using the IUCN Red List of Threatened Species, they examined patterns in those species' abundance, extinction risks, and underlying causes for species declines. And the data show clear trends in spillover risk that highlight how people have interacted with animals throughout history.
So according to the findings from the study, domesticated animals, including livestock, have shared the highest number of viruses with humans, with 8 times more zoonotic viruses compared to wild mammalian species. So this is likely a result of our frequent close interactions with these species over centuries. The study also found that wild animals that have increased in abundance and that have adapted well to human-dominated environments also share more viruses with people. These include some rodent, bat, and primate species that live among people near our homes, around farms and crops, making them high risk for ongoing transmission of viruses to people.
Yeah, and at the other end of the spectrum are threatened and endangered species. So these are the animals whose population declines were connected to things like hunting, the wildlife trade, and decreases in habitat quality. So these species were predicted to host twice as many zoonotic viruses compared to threatened species that had populations decreasing for other reasons. So what the study noted was that threatened and endangered species tend to be highly managed and directly monitored by humans, who, you know, are trying to bring about their population recovery. So what happens is that that then puts them into greater contact with people. So bats, for example, repeatedly have been implicated as a source of what is termed high consequence pathogens, including in SARS, the Nipah virus, the Marburg virus, and the Ebola viruses.
Yes, so lead author Christine Johnson also noted that we need to be really attentive to how we interact with wildlife and the activities that bring humans and wildlife together, as that obviously we don't want pandemics pandemics are off the scale of COVID-19. So she suggested something echoed by many scientists and conservationists for a long time now. We need to find ways to coexist safely with wildlife, as, you know, they have no shortages of viruses to pass over to us.
It's a terrifying thought, right? Yes. And in an episode of NBC's Think Again, news correspondent Andrew Stern investigated the link between deforestation, habitat change and pandemics, from Zika to West Nile, from an Ebola to SARS, even Nipah to COVID-19. Deforestation has had a hand in many of the world's worst viral outbreaks. So here is his conversation with Dr. Amy Vitor, a professor at the University of Florida's Emerging Pathogens Institute. So Dr. Amy studies the interface between vector-borne diseases and land use, and has also studied deforestation's impact on disease transmission. And she's been doing that for a few decades now. So here is a clip of that conversation, which explores the big question, you know, are humans to blame for making disease outbreaks worse?
The thing that got me started in all this was really looking at how deforestation of the Amazon influenced malaria in particular. And there we found a very strong association between malaria breeding sites for the malaria vector, Anopheles, and the degree of deforestation that we're finding there.
It's worth noting there's two types of infectious disease impacted by deforestation. Vector-borne disease, which is what Dr. Vitor is talking about here. Vector-borne means the disease is carried by a blood-feeding organism, like mosquitoes or ticks. The other, which she'll get into in a bit, is zoonotic disease, which happens when a disease makes a jump between animals and humans, like Ebola, SARS, and COVID-19.
How strong of a link did you find between deforestation and the rise in infectious disease in those areas?
What we saw was very clear. And forested areas that were pristine, we saw none of the vector, essentially. But when we took that same method to villages that were deforested, there we saw a many, many fold increase in the number of these mosquitoes breeding in the water and biting humans as well.
Humans cut down forests for any number of reasons. Logging, mining, converting land to farms. When we settle on land that recently was a forest, or put our livestock there, it puts us and our food supply in closer and consistent contact with animals we wouldn't normally encounter.
You have primarily focused, or at least originally focused, on deforestation in the Amazon. Are we seeing a similar pattern in other areas of the world that have been deforested with both mosquitoes and other vectors?
So, for example, the Nipah virus outbreak that occurred in the late 1990s entailed essentially an outbreak of an encephalitis that affected especially workers in pig farms and pig abattoirs. And those people were getting quite sick and falling ill and dying. And also the pigs were sick. It turned out to be a virus that was known to be carried in flying foxes. Because of droughts and slash and burn agriculture, there was a haze that hung over all that rainforest, basically reducing the amount of fruit available for those flying foxes. So that caused them to migrate up north to Malaysia and Singapore, causing that outbreak there.
When humans cut down forests, water settles into shallow pools, which is ideal for mosquito breeding.
When you get an area after deforestation, essentially, you have trees that then are strewn to the ground. The logs block the streams and the rivers, and that in itself causes blockage and accumulation of water.
When people then build farms or villages on that now cleared land, they're suddenly in close contact with more mosquitoes, as well as potentially diseased animals whose habitat we just cut down. Because mosquitoes aren't the only vector spreading diseases because of deforestation. For example, the Northeast U.S. has seen an explosion of Lyme disease. A big reason is the rapid expansion of the suburbs there. More people are in contact with deer and the disease-carrying ticks that feed on the deer. To put it in context, between 2004 and 2016, U.S. cases of disease caused by ticks, mosquitoes, and fleas tripled. Recent epidemics like Zika and West Nile virus have both been linked to deforestation and habitat changes caused by humans. The same seems to be true for the zoonotic diseases that make the jump from animals to humans, like we think COVID-19 did. Ebola outbreaks are strongly correlated with recent deforestation in Central and West Africa. Which brings me back to the original question. Are humans to blame for the uptick in infectious disease we seem to be seeing? And will it get worse going forward? The more research I read, the stronger that link seemed to be, which could make for a pretty uncertain future.
Certainly, we're going places where we never used to go before. We're changing habitat at a rapid rate. And so those changes seem to be highly associated with both the mosquitoes, the ticks, as well as vertebrates that tend to thrive under these conditions. So yes, variety of infectious diseases, I think, will continue to increase over the years because of the pressures that we are exerting on our immediate and expanded environment.
So that was a clip from a segment called Think Again, produced by NBC over in the US, which explored how deforestation gives rise to pandemics. So separately, more than 200 of the world's wildlife groups have written to the World Health Organization, calling on it to recommend to countries a highly precautionary approach to the multi-billion dollar wildlife trade and a permanent ban on all live wildlife markets and the use of wildlife in traditional medicine. So the groups which include the International Fund for Animal Welfare, the Zoological Society of London, and PETA, say that a ban on wildlife markets globally will help prevent the spread of disease and address one of the major drivers of species extinction.
Yeah, so those organizations argue that zoonotic diseases are responsible for over 2 billion cases of human illness and over 2 million human deaths each year, including from Ebola, MERS, HIV, bovine tuberculosis, rabies, and leptospirosis. And in a growing sign that global organizations are embarrassed by the emergence of zoonotic diseases in traded animals, CITES, which is the body which regulates the international trade of animals, refused to be drawn into the growing debate about the origins of COVID-19.
In a terse statement, it said, "Matters regarding zoonotic diseases are outside of CITES' mandate, and the Secretariat does not have the competence to make comments on the recent news on the possible links between human consumption of wild animals and COVID-19. So it seems to be becoming clearer that animal health and human health are very, very tightly interconnected. Mm-hmm. We need to think about how environmental health is really at the core of both of those, and that public health is really actually an environmental health issue.
That's right. And I think we really need to think about wildlife health as sort of this last frontier. You know, we've had big investments in human health, then we've had big investments in domesticated species or a domesticated animal health, you know, because of food safety. And, you know, there are our pets, of course. But wildlife health has been like the last one to come along with relatively fewer people working in that sphere and with less investment oftentimes, certainly from, you know, our governments. Mm-hmm. And we've learned a lot, but, you know, it's pretty obvious that there's so much more to learn.
Yes. So here's Inger Anderson, the Executive Director of the United Nations Environment Programme, or UNEP, explaining how the health of our planet plays an important role in spreading or containing zoonotic diseases, and how, in order to prevent future pandemics, it's important to take climate change into consideration.
What we do know is that the health of our planet plays a super important role in spread or containing what we refer to as zoonotic diseases. These diseases that jump from wildlife and wild spaces and cultivated animals in farming, into the human population. And we know that when we encroach on nature, when we destroy forests, when we degrade the environment, then we are disturbing what is supposed to be left undisturbed. And when we illegally trade wildlife and mix species that normally live in very distinct ecosystems, but put them in very confined spaces, in markets, etc., that can also be the petri dish for virus creation. Our interference with nature is clearly a dimension of the level of increase of these diseases. 75% or so of new infectious diseases are zoonotic in nature. 60% of the existing infectious diseases are zoonosis. So when we see biodiversity being degraded, when we reduce the richness of the natural world, then we also see a link to increase in zoonoses, in these viruses that can increase. Whereas when we see a rich, lush natural world, we tend not to see that. So it's very important that the links to nature and the links to good biodiversity stewardship is understood. But clearly, having a deeper understanding of zoonoses is a must. But we also work on the brown side of the environmental agenda: waste, chemicals, etc. And here there's a huge and urgent issue, obviously, because the waste streams will change significantly, especially medical waste. And much of that medical waste will go, will happen in countries that may not have had that amount of medical waste before and will not have treatment for incineration, et cetera, et cetera. And safe disposal of medical waste, these gowns, these gloves, the chemicals, et cetera, is really important. What we are seeing, of course, is with the temporary closures, with the stay at home, with the economic slowdown, some people, there's a degree of taking a victory lap in some environmental quarters because you're seeing emissions go down. That is wrong, and that is not a silver lining. We have a billion people in essential lockdown. We have millions of people who are dropping into poverty. So the answer is obviously not to stop all the wheels turning of our economy. The answer is to deal with this virus first and foremost from a health perspective. But once that is behind us, as we build back, let's consider how we can build back better such that these stimuli also drive greener development. Let's be smart and think around this. When we want to get people back to work, get the economies going again, let's build back better. So there is a real opportunity for both climate and for nature. The takeaway message is keep wild wild, keep remote remote, have good stewardship of nature and enjoy it and make sure that we conserve, preserve and ensure that nature stays just that, natural.
Takeaways are simple. Mm. Yes, a lot needs to be done to regulate wildlife trade and wildlife trafficking, I think, you know, and there's a lot that we need to learn about how to live more safely with wildlife. And it's really important that we consider how our actions are changing the environment and, you know, therefore wildlife behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think here in Malaysia, especially, we really need to stop deforestation as much as possible.
Yes. Look where all this development has gotten us.
Yes. Mm. And there has to be a stop at some point, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you have any thoughts, tweet us, you know, just at BFM Radio. You can send us a message there or you can send us a message over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to leave you with Marvin Gaye singing Mercy, Mercy Me. But stay tuned to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.